Hello, and welcome to Champagne with Craig. We are unapologetic about loving our community and those that live here. Our goal is to focus on those that make our community amazing. We are not political. We are not judgmental. Our goal is to learn and use this platform to make us even better. Our beliefs are there is more good than bad, more positive than negative, and our glass is always half full. We support and encourage. We believe in responsibility and a simple belief in doing the right thing. We believe there's a lot more gray in the world and less black and white. We practice humility, and our definition of humility is being honest and sincerely willing to learn a few simple things from other people, having no desire to strangle them in the process. I hope you enjoy, and let's listen. Hi there. Welcome to another episode of Champagne with Craig. I'm sitting here today with Mike Tennant, of Insure Champagne here in Champaign, Illinois. Except we're not going to talk about real estate today, or we're not going to talk about insurance. Full disclosure, Mike is a long time, one of my best friends. He is my insurance agent and has taken care of me for many, many years. And I appreciate that. But what we're going to talk about today is a much more serious note. Champagne with Craig is about understanding people, helping people. And Mike has been so gracious as to volunteer to talk about something that has affected him, that affects a lot of people out there, and that that we all are just probably one step away from affecting us, if it hasn't. What we're talking about today is we're talking about alcoholism. And Mike's battles through his life with it, his, I can positively say, his conquers of it. And Mike Tennant, welcome to our podcast, and thank you for being willing to share something very personal, but something also very important for others to hear.
Thank you, Craig. I appreciate the opportunity to help in any way.
Well, where do we start? We ran around together for years. I mean, I can only reference back to as long as I've known you. Mm-hmm. And we have been golf friends and back in the day, drinking buddies, whatever you want to call it. And through all of that time, I never knew the struggles you went through, ever. And I was with you.
An awful lot.
An awful lot.
Yeah.
I mean, not just, you know, a couple hours a day.
No.
Weekends together and hours together.
Yes.
So why don't you start with your story, where you want to lead it off, and I'll just sit here and and listen.
Well, you know, first of all, I want to say that I don't think you ever, I know that you don't ever conquer alcoholism or any other type of addiction, but through one day at a time, I'm able to stay sober and make much better decisions than what I did earlier in my life. The main difference between what I see Craig doing and me doing when we were younger and going out and having beers after work 25 years ago was that when the bell rang 6 o'clock, Craig would go home and be with his family, where I would just be getting started. And the difference is that once I had one drink, it was Katie bar the door. I couldn't stop. And I think that's the main difference that some people don't understand, is that for me, and from what I've seen, and these are just my personal beliefs and what I've learned, is that an alcoholic, once they start, can't stop. And so somebody who gets off their job, stops at the local pub, has a beer, maybe two beers, and then goes home and does it every day, might not be an alcoholic. Somebody like me who would stop in after work, once I had one, I could not stop. And it would carry me on into 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock. I would have episodes of blackouts where I just could not remember from 7 or 8 o'clock on till midnight or 1. And I'm not talking about just forgetting how I drove home. I had 5 and 6 hours worth of where I really didn't know where I'd been or who I'd talked to or what I'd done. I guess I was lucky in that respect that I never hurt anybody else. I unlucky in the other respect is that besides hurting me, I hurt my family very much. And that's true of most addictions, that the people that truly suffer are the ones that are closest to you. I also hid my alcoholism as much as I could, because I would not drink per se in champagne establishments. I would drive to rural areas, always stopping for beer on the way, going to a bar, having one or two, say in Mahomet, and then I might end up in Rantoul, Tuscola. I mean, I had a tendency to have one or two in a spot and then leave before people figured out how drunk I was. So that was my beginning of my journey of alcoholism. Obviously started a long time before that.
When did it start? When do you think it started, Mike?
It started the very first time I drank. I did not drink until my senior year in high school. It was New Year's night. We were having a party at another kid's house. Mom and dad were there. We'd gotten cherry vodka.
And yuck.
That's enough to make you puke. Only time I ever drank cherry vodka. But
good choice.
It tasted good with 7-Up for a while. But I drank that night. Once I had one, I noticed that I fit in better. I was more at ease. I thought I was a cool cat, whatever. But I drank that night to drunkenness and to a point of pass out. So the very first time I drank like an alcoholic. Once I got it in my system, I drank till I couldn't drink anymore. And so that was my first foray into alcohol. And I really didn't drink that much rest of my high school senior year. My drinking started escalating once I got into college. And again, it was the same story. I would have one or two and then drink to the point of, you know, not being able to stand and passing out and doing the other things. So very early on, I didn't know it. I thought that's how everybody drank. You know, you drank to get drunk. And that carried with me throughout my whole time period of drinking.
You know, you said your college years, and what you described, I don't want to say normal, but it's not unusual for a large majority of college students that period of life, you're around people, the parties, that social life would have a tendency to lead people down that path, I included, of course. You continue that even after that, and some people don't. Mm-hmm. So I would like to say that my life mirrored you in that experience in college. Very much it did.
Yes, that can happen. But the difference between Craig and Mike, my belief is that I've got...
There's a lot of differences before we start there. Okay, we're just talking about...
Yeah, I'm a good guy. Yeah,
I mean, there's the devil and the angel and all this stuff
going
on here.
That's exactly right. We know who the angel is.
Yeah.
The difference, I believe, between... let me put it this way. You can binge drink in college, be very successful throughout your life. You're not doing any hard drinking. At 65, you retire and you become an alcoholic. Because the same thing that caused your binge drinking as an alcoholic doesn't leave you. So for me and for others, once we got past that early 20s stage, some people grew out of that and accepted other responsibility. I accepted those same responsibilities, but continued the same way of drinking. I never had one drink. I never had two drinks. I had enough to get me drunk and past the point of drunk. You might have had one beer or two beers and gone home. Alcoholism never leaves you. There's stories of people being sober for 15, 20, 25, 30 years and picking up a bottle again and being right back at where they're at if they would have continued drinking all along. So a person who might quit drinking as an alcoholic at age 30, when they pick the bottle back up at age 50, it would be just like they'd been drinking for 20 more years. When they pick it up, they don't start out having one bottle. All of a sudden, they're drinking two bottles. And I'm talking about quarts, not beers. Two bottles, two quarts of vodka a day because they missed that previous 20 years. Now, I don't understand how that works or why that works, but alcoholism to me is two sections to it. There's a physical attraction, which is what drives everybody to do it. And then for the alcoholic, there's a mental obsession. And when the mental obsession kicks in and we have our one drink, physically we could have gone 30 days without it. We're not addicted to it at that point. It's the addiction has left our body after 30 or 60 days. But the mental craving that you experience does not allow you to stop. So when I was trying to stop, my cravings would not allow me to stop. And I think that's the difference between the addict and the normal weekend drinker or weekday drinker that might have one or two.
How long have you been sober now, Mike?
A little over 16 years.
Well, it seems like yesterday. I'm sure it doesn't for you because of, quite frankly, the daily struggles that you go through. But that seems impossible that 16 years have passed. I remember the day that you came to me and said it.
Yeah.
I remember it vividly.
Yeah. But that day that I decided I needed to stop drinking, it took me almost 3 years, 3.5 years, to get 1 year of sobriety. I could go 30 days, I could go 60 days, but I was white knuckling it. And the cravings that I had every day would not allow me not to cave in. Eventually, I was going to cave in. The difference maker for me was that when I finally got on my knees and begged and said, "Dear Lord, let me drink in peace, or never let me have another drop again," from that moment on, with tears streaming down my cheeks, I have never had another craving for alcohol. It was instantaneous. Now, was I touched? I believe so. Are there other people like me? Millions. Are there other people that if they did that, would it work? Maybe. But for me, it was a total surrender that alcohol kicks my ass and there isn't anything I can do about it. And so I look at alcohol like rat poison. A sane person would not drink a bottle of rat poison. And for me, a bottle of beer or a shot of peppermint schnapps, which I drank an awful lot of,
double,
is pure rat poison. And I know that if I drink it, one, I'm going to die. And so I don't.
Do you live in fear?
Every day. Yeah, I don't. It's not going to be the caboose that kills me when a train's running me over. It's going to be the engine. If I have one, it's going to send me down a path that I'm not going to be able to stop. My mental obsession that I dealt with for 3 years, and that fear leads me every single day to pray that I never have a beer in my hand again, nor do I want it. But I'm very, very leery of being around circumstances that would occur. I've had extreme joy in my life for the last 16 years that I didn't have to drink over, and I've had extreme sadness of loved ones passing on that I have not had to drink over. So I can do it. Other people can do it as well. But for me, I wake up every morning and my goal through the day is not to drink. And if I meet that goal, then I thank the good Lord at night that I made it another day, and I'll face tomorrow when tomorrow comes.
That was, you went into the question I was going to ask. What was a turning point that allowed you to say, you said you took you 3 years, and that point that it allowed you to say, okay, enough is enough, and you surrender yourself to Christ and ask for help. For those of us out there that, and you talked about this a little earlier, wondering where that point is, wondering, and I know it's different for each individual, and you only speak for yourself. You told me before this interview that I only speak for myself. What are some telltale signs to someone like me that I am reaching that point to where I need to stop? Or, you know, there were signs you said, you know, blackouts or whatever it was. The reason I'm asking this question is twofold. One, frankly, out of concern for myself and what I do and how I behave. But two, I ran around with Mike for years. I mean, in the summer, almost every weekend we spent together in a golf tournament somewhere during a 3 or 4 year period, during when you were drinking. I never knew, Mike. I never knew the difference. I never knew you did those things that you said you did. So you hit it for me, but what was the signs that kept beating on you that?
Well, it is different for everyone, but
does that question even make sense?
Yes, it does, very much so. If a loved one comes to you and says, you know, we have an issue here. When I was, after Craig and I won a golf tournament, and there's a write-up in the newspaper, my father wrote me a note 2 days later, and he paraphrased it as a headline in a newspaper with a story underneath it, and it said, local golf champion kills family driving while intoxicated. And he went on to handwrite out what had occurred, that after winning a golf event, he went out, got drunk, ran a stoplight, killed a family. Now, being in the alcoholic state that I was when I opened up that, I thought, this is a crock of crap, and ripped it up and threw it away. I wish I would have kept it, looking back. My wife would come to me and say, we've got an issue. And I would get better for a little bit, or I'd hide it more. But to make it even simpler, if you think you have a problem drinking, you do. A normal drinker does not think he has a problem drinking.
But don't we all hide in our own little way? You built up a wall. Don't we all build up mechanisms for our faults? It could be drinking. It could be whatever it could be. Don't we build up mechanisms to ignore those signs?
We build up mechanisms to ignore those things, but we also are in denial that other people don't know about it. The reality is other people know about it, and they know better than you. So when I quit drinking and said to my loved ones, I have a problem, they said, no shit. We've known for years. I didn't get in trouble every time I'd been drinking. I did get in trouble every time I drank, but every time I got in trouble, I'd been drinking. So you might try to hide whatever issue you might have with addiction. Those closest to you know.
You know, that's so interesting, and I'm not going to mention another gentleman's name because he's not part of the conversation, but another gentleman that was with us those weekends together. And I mean, there's no question about, I mean, we both love you. I mean, as a friend, as respected you as a father and as our insurance agent, but we didn't know. So from a family, I guess we don't wake up within the morning and go to bed at night with you, thank God. That's left for Judy, but.
You went home at 6 o'clock. You didn't know that I stayed out till midnight.
No, we didn't.
You didn't know that in the mornings I had dry heaves if I didn't puke. You didn't know that I smoked dope in the morning so I wouldn't have a hangover. You saw me go to work. You saw me leave work. But you saw me only at work, and that was my persona. I was hiding it. But during that whole time, you have to understand, I was fearful of being found out of who I truly was. And that drove me to drink more. You can't live in fear every day.
But you live in fear now.
Yeah, I do, but it's a different fear.
Is it possible to explain the differences?
Yeah, I was in a fear of being found out. I'm not afraid of that anymore. Everybody knows that Mike is an alcoholic. My closest friends, my clients, you know, I've been very upfront with that. The fear I have now is doing something stupid. And as long as I don't do something stupid, I'm okay. My fear is gone of being found out. My fear of going down that path is, I don't know what word I want to say, is negated by the fact that I take the necessary steps to make sure that doesn't happen. And before, I couldn't.
I don't know what, I mean, I've read it several times that an individual's existence is tied to either pain or pleasure, one of the two emotions. And you're talking about the pain of being found out versus the pleasure of drinking.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And if I'm not understanding this correctly, I want you to stop me. The pain became so bad that the teeter-totter went the other way. The pleasure didn't outweigh the pain.
There was no pleasure.
Interesting.
There's none. At the end, there isn't any. It's an existence. There's a big difference. I had to drink to get drunk to forget my pain. And all it did is cause more pain. And that's a Ferris wheel that's really hard to jump off of. And once you're on that Ferris wheel, you can't stop it yourself. You have to have someone stop that Ferris wheel, hold your hand, and help you to get off. And that's where I was very lucky. I had a very strong support staff. And when I told people that I was no longer drinking, I had friends like you and others that protected me. That when people offered me drinks, they said no, and always had my back until I could learn how to exist without drinking, which was very difficult. I drank to be happy. I drank to be sad. I drank. That's the difference.
I mean, it was a part of life. I mean, it was a part of your existence.
It was such a part of my existence that I had to connive a way that if I had a parent teacher at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, what lie was I going to be able to tell afterwards so I could go out and get drinks? If I was Little League coach.
You mean lie to your kids or
lie to my loved ones, my spouse, whoever else. If I had a Little League game and was coaching, how could I, after the game, lie to my spouse or lie to my friends or lie to other so I could go out and get drunk? One of the things that helped me a little bit was that when you drink to the point that I did, it was hard for me to go back to back. So I wouldn't want to drink the second day. On the weekends, if I had things to do with my family, Monday was Katie bar the door. Monday was by far my biggest drinking day. because I hadn't had enough over the weekend. I had to be back after playing golf with you to a family function. So I could have 6 or 7 beers on the golf course, get a buzz, but I couldn't keep it going. And that would make me irritable. And Monday I would leave work at 2 o'clock and it was Katie bar the door. Who knows where he was going to go or what he was going to do.
Ed, I don't know if I want to ask this question the way it's popping into my mind. You've hinted at it or whatever. Advice to those. I mean, you turn to God or Jesus. But advice to those that are feeling that pain, that you had a relationship at some point with God, or what are those that maybe don't have that relationship? How, I mean, well, I don't even know what I'm asking.
Sure.
I'm trying hard, but I don't know what I'm asking.
I think the first...
This is here for... What we're doing is try to help people.
Right. The first thing that comes to my mind with what you're stating is a cold, flat fact that those that try to do it by themselves are not very successful. Slim and none chance. Those that seek outside help have a much better chance.
Okay.
Will those that seek the good Lord be 100% successful? No. But you've got a better chance simply because there's somebody else besides you. Alcoholics, for me, you're egotistical and you have low self-esteem.
Those are too powerful.
Right. How can you be egotistical and have low self-esteem? Because when I would talk to my wife, I would tell her about all the great things I am and who I am and what I do and look how I provide for the family. But in my own mind, I knew I was failing. I knew what I was. I knew what I was becoming. And it hurt me.
Did you feel like a fraud?
I was a big fraud. Not from a work standpoint.
Yeah, not of the cheating. Monetarily. But you would say you were cheating.
But my soul was dead. I was dead inside. I had no confidence. And that affected, to some point, my golf ability as well. You know that after I quit drinking, I was able to win other golf tournaments. And there was a period there where I wasn't winning golf tournaments. Now, it was very difficult to win a golf tournament sober the first time because I always had that beer to calm my nerves, you know, or whatever. But sober living for me is significantly better than hiding in the shame and fear of where I was. And that's kind of what leads me. So for the person, as what we originally were talking about in this, that is looking for an answer for help, there's a lot of help out there. Go to your loved ones. Tell them that you have a problem. They will probably agree with you because they know. Then find help. There's a lot of help out there. Ask your physician. You can ask your minister at church. You can go online. There's a lot of organizations that can help. And once you've done that and made that choice and have realized that I need help, get that help. And then the hard part is do what the hell they say and don't think you know anything because you don't. That was my hardest part and why it took me so long to get sober, was that I still was like the cartoon cat going through the door. I had all 4 paws out, scratch mark in the walls, not wanting to go through that door. But once I went through that door, it was like watching The Wizard of Oz in color. That's how it was.
We have a mutual friend that is an alcoholic, well, and has quit for many years. And I know he gets up very, very early in the morning and reaches out to friends to support them.
Yes.
And, you know, I've talked to him about this topic, and we talked together about it. And he goes, Craig, just let me tell you one thing. Nobody looks at me and say, hey, why don't you start drinking again?
That's exactly right.
I don't mean to make light of it.
It's true.
But the point was that those people did tell him.
That's right.
And those people that do care about him still tell him.
Yeah.
That's still with him. And, you know, that him saying that has always made an impression upon me.
Yeah. You know, for me and for a lot of others, no one wants to see me spend my money on cocaine. No one wants to see me in the bars drunk. No one wants to see me driving down the road drunk. My loved ones like who I am because they got back the person that I was. And that's the big key. Your loved ones love you unconditionally, mother, father, spouse, once you make the change. Does everything get better rosy right away with everybody you love? No, because I told them a million times I was going to stop and didn't. But once you start...
credibility.
It starts getting better each day, and it might take time, and you got to give time. But once you do it, things get better and better and better and better. And the thing is, they don't get worse, ever. I've had bad days, but the only way I can make it worse is by drinking.
If we've talked about a lot, and I hate to break it down to one thing, but somebody that's listening to this podcast, and we wish the audience was bigger, but it will be several hundred. So please share it if you have a friend that's in this situation. If you could get one message out to that person that's listening, that is thinking or starting to believe they have a problem, whatever stage they're in, what would that one message be?
You are not alone. I thought I was alone. I thought that I couldn't get help. The reality of it is, there's millions upon millions upon millions of people just in the United States. The crisis that we're coming through from opioid, alcohol, drugs, whatever they might be, if you have a problem, realize you're not alone, and there's people like me that would love to help. And we do help.
You're not alone. And you see a lot of people that you go through the world and that talk the talk and walk the walk. I mentioned a previous gentleman, name's not going to be disclosed, but I've watched you and him and another friend that's gone down this path be that support system for other people.
Yes.
I've witnessed it personally. I've witnessed you trying to help those that haven't quit yet. And it's I don't want to say it's heartfelt. It's sincere. The pain that it's very clear the pain, you know the pain they're under.
We know firsthand.
Even if they don't.
Even if they don't, we know where their life is heading because we've already been there. Our experience tells us where they're going to go the majority of the time. The hardest thing, we have another friend, acquaintance, who died in the last year or two.
Yeah.
It's hard to see somebody go down that path. But I'm also relieved that it's them and not me. So those that go down that path are showing me where I could go if I choose to drink. there's people that are there willing to help if they'll help themselves. And the first point is, realize you're not alone and you can get help.
I've heard you say that. Mm-hmm. I've heard you say that, you know, I'm trying, they're not listening, and there's only so much I can try and do.
Yep.
I've heard you say, there's nothing in the world that you can't ask of me. I've heard you, and I've seen you walk that walk. And as we wrap this up, we do this to highlight things. This podcast is nothing about highlighting. We talked about race, you know, in our first ones, Mike. And I had a fun one with Lauren Tate, and we talked about a history of Illinois sports. And so this podcast is to highlight, and I don't want to say highlight or glamorize your issue, but to put it in perspective for those this might be able to help.
Hopefully it will help. There's a lot of people that need help, and the pandemic has made it worse.
Yeah, I believe that.
And just worse from those that were getting help, were unable to possibly meet in their larger groups that they were used to, or they weren't able to do one-on-one, or for whatever reason, or their drinking became worse, or their drug use became worse, or whatever addiction they had became worse. There's a large segment of our population that suffers daily from those addictions. And it's sad that we're not able to help more.
Well, let's take away from this that there are people to help. They're willing to help you. And we always joke about this, and we can joke about it now, Mike and I, about this topic.
Yes.
And because of the nature of our relationship, but Mike's got something very special, and we laugh about it. But what Mike Tennant has for me is Mike has that card.
Thank you.
If he ever comes to me, I quit.
Yeah.
Because he does know.
Yes.
And all of us that drink, we all feel at times we overdo it. Me included. And you got that card.
Yeah. As my grandmother once told me, when your vices become habits, you have an issue.
Is golf a vice?
No.
Or a habit?
No, it's a four-letter word.
Okay. I have to agree. Okay, we're going to wrap this up on a laugh. Again, Champagne with Craig. Appreciate you listening. If you do or want to seek help and want to reach out to me, I certainly will forward some contact information on to you that will do so. Again, Happy New Year. It's our first podcast of the year, and I'll see you on the other side.
Thank you, Craig.